now ask you then to give your earnest attention to Brother Stephen as he comes forward and delivers unto us his remarks on Psalm 36. Brother Stephen, please.
My beloved brethren and sisters in the glorious hope of Israel. In a nutshell, the psalm before us for consideration this evening is man's wickedness and rebellion in stark contrast to the righteousness of God. The psalm pivots around verses 4 and 6. Verse 4 says, "He setteth himself in a way that is not good," contrasted to "thy righteousness is like the great or lofty or high mountains," verse 6. The psalm, brethren and sisters, is split up into three sections. Verses 1 to 4 incorporate the thoughts of the rebellious, the thinking of the flesh, the natural sinful man. Verses 5 to 9 deals with the confidence of the faithful in righteous ale. And then verses 10 to 12 incorporates a prayer of the righteous for divine help. Now we'll see from the superscription of this psalm, which says, "Of David, the servant of Yahweh." It is indeed a messianic psalm. And we would suggest that it runs parallel to two psalms, Psalm chapter 14, or Psalm 14, which has this same superscription, another messianic psalm, as does Psalm 18. Let us go, if we may, to Psalm chapter 14. Psalm chapter 14 says, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, they have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. Yahweh looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. They are all gone aside, they are all together become filthy. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread and call not upon Yahweh? There were they in great fear, for God is in the generation of the righteous. Ye have shamed the counsel of the poor, because Yahweh is his refuge. Oh, that the salvation of Israel will come out of Zion, when Yahweh bringeth back the captivity of his people. Jacob shall rejoice, and Israel shall be glad." Paul, brethren and sisters, cites this very psalm in Romans chapter 3. And that's where we would like to go. And if there was a parallel chapter to Psalm 36 outside of the Psalms, it would be Paul's writings here in the third, possibly the second, but certainly the third chapter of Romans. Romans chapter 3 and verse 10. "As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth, there is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is in an open sepulchre. With their tongues they have used deceit. The poison of asps is under their lips. Whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways. And the way of peace have they not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes." What the apostle advances, brethren and sisters, here in this chapter is that by voice, verse 14, walk, verses 15 to 17, and point of view at verse 18, the Israelites under the law acted in the same way as did the Gentiles. That is, as though Yahweh is not a living reality. Although this is true of the Gentiles today, which they exhibit through their evil actions, it's an exhortation, brethren and sisters, unto each one of us to ensure that our actions and our walk don't belie a belief in the living ale. This category of people under the law rested confidently in a justification by the law that the law did not and could not provide. And this chapter then, the third chapter of Romans, characterizes the natural man. The mouth, eyes, fingers, feet, and heart. Let us go to Proverbs chapter 6. For those taking notes, really, the outside chapters from the Psalms that, if we had lots of time, we would deal much with, would be Proverbs chapter 6, Romans chapter 3, and indeed most of Hosea. But we will take just a few verses for comparison and contrast and study this evening. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 12. A naughty, that is a worthless person, a wicked man walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes, he speaketh with his feet, he teacheth with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart, he deviseth mischief continually. He soweth discord, verse 16. These six things doth Yahweh hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him. A proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief. Let's go back to Psalm 36, verse 1. The transgression of the wicked saith within my heart that there is no fear of God before his eyes. If these are the ways, brethren and sisters, of the natural man, if these are the characteristics of the natural man, indeed, what can change us? There is only one power which can change and transform, and that is the fear of Yahweh, which is the beginning of wisdom. We'll remember the words of Paul at Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. By the renewing of your mind, that ye prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Brother Grocott talks about this change as metamorphosis, a complete change from a caterpillar into a butterfly, from one stage into a totally different stage, a complete transformation. And Brother Grocott says in Search Me, O God, entitled, What Man Is He That Desireth Life? Says, the only hope of salvation is complete dedication to the life of God. And this, he says, consists of three things. One, a resolute determination to learn as much as possible about God and his desires from his word. Secondly, a resolute determination to eliminate from life everything out of harmony with God's holiness and perfection. And finally, a resolute determination to do everything that God desires. There will be many mistakes, he says, and failings and self-disappointments. But faithfully and prayerfully adhered to, this is the sum total of life. Search Me, O God, page 33. So, brethren and sisters, then, in connection with this power which alone can change us, let us now turn to Ecclesiastes in chapter 12. In verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. It is suggested that the word in italics should have been omitted, leaving, "For this is the whole or complete man." Fear God and keep his commandments is in stark contrast to the belief of the transgressor or rebellious man concerning whom there is no fear of God before his eyes. Mankind, brethren and sisters, generally falls into these two categories, wicked and righteous. The righteous see the virtue of seeking after Yahweh with the whole heart. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1 says, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, that is separate, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service." Those two categories of wicked and righteous are so because the one class, in pride and self-reliance, follows after the thoughts of the inward man, whilst the other, in humility and reliance on Yahweh, the great creator and sustainer, follows after higher things, rendering that reasonable service. We have to get away from sowing to the flesh, for what we sow, that too shall we also reap. Let's go back to Romans chapter 3. We'd like to look at three specific verses, 10, 15, and 18. Romans 3, Romans chapter 3, verse 10 to begin with. "As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one." Verse 15, "Their feet are swift to shed blood." And verse 18, "There is no fear of God before their eyes." This contrasts to the work of the Lord Jesus Christ, in whom there is a way of peace and joy unspeakable for the endless ages of eternity. Come with me to Isaiah chapter 32. Verse 16. Concerning the future we read, "Then judgment shall dwell in the wilderness, and righteousness remain in the fruitful field. And the work of righteousness shall be peace, and the effect of righteousness quietness, and assurance forever." Yes, when Christ returns to the earth, he shall bring healing in his beams. The nations will see a divine healing if they submit to him and to his word. The Hollywood star Patrick Swayze died this week of pancreatic cancer. And I remember reading a small piece back in January when his illness was announced that he wasn't ready to die and that he had plans for at least the next 2 years. Less than 9 months on, brethren and sisters, he has passed away. All is vanity and vexation of spirit in this life. We cannot count tomorrow as a day of opportunity, for we don't know the time of our passing from life to death, or when the call of our Master will go forth. If we sow to the flesh, and rely on ourselves and in our own abilities, and succumb to the impulses of the flesh, then we too can fall within the category of those who fear not Yahweh, even unwittingly. I was reading just some days ago of the time when Brother H.P. Mansfield was admitted to hospital with exhaustion some years ago. And he commented on the fact that he found himself on the 8th floor of an enormous Adelaide City Hospital. When he got better and was able to look around him at the various buildings surrounding them, he realized that there were buildings and floors of sick people, literally hundreds of them. He commented on the fact that people came and went, but their physicians were only concerned about a cure of their natural ailments. Not one, he said, were cured of any other problem. Those that got drunk, for example, fell over and broke a leg, came to the accident room, their legs were reset and sent off again, probably to do the same over again at a future date. Doesn't this remind us, brethren and sisters, of the words of Christ in Luke chapter 8 and verse 43, where we read of the woman who had an issue of blood some 12 years and ploughed all of her money into physician care, and yet the problem just got worse. Luke chapter 8 and verse 43. And a woman having an issue of blood 12 years, which had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed of any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment, and immediately her issue of blood stanched. She, brethren and sisters, finally sought for Christ and was healed by his spirit power through faith that man could not accomplish what the great God of heaven and earth could accomplish. Verse 48. He said unto her, Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace. On the other hand, we see contrasting accounts in the scriptures of those who lean to their own ways and to their own understanding. Asa had a terrible disease of the feet, as we know, but found no cure because in his disease he sought not to Yahweh, but to physicians. Asa was a scientist, and his name means physician. Come with me to 2 Chronicles chapter 16. As we look at some of these examples in the scripture whose fear of God was not before them. 2 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 12. And Asa, in the 39th year of his reign, was diseased in his feet, until his disease was exceeding great. Yet in his disease he sought not to Yahweh, but to the physicians. When Christ returns to the earth, the nations will be cured and healed. Yahweh is a healer. There is that title that incorporates this. Yahweh Rofika. Yahweh that healeth thee. Exodus 15 verse 26. Or as Rotherham renders this verse, Yahweh the physician. Abimelech, Miriam, the psalmist, Hezekiah, Jeremiah and others all experienced his power to heal. He has promised to heal the hurt of the nation of Israel, the barrenness of the land, individual distresses and failings, and the tokens of all that we can see today. The title is derived from a Hebrew root, rapha, signifying to heal thoroughly, to mend, to repair, to pacify and to bind together. Israel, brethren and sisters, was indicted for neglecting their divine position. Jeremiah chapter 8, if you will, verse 21. Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 21. For the hurt of the daughter of my people am I hurt. I am black. Astonishment hath taken hold on me. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then is not the health of the daughter of my people recovered? And the nations, brethren and sisters, are no different today. There is not a God before their eyes. Just as Israel was punished for their unbelief, so the nations are shortly to be punished for their neglect of this same subject. Where does this neglect stem from? In one word, pride. In another word, arrogance. Pride and arrogance. Let's go back to our psalm. And continue the thought at verse 2. For he flattereth himself in his own eyes, until his iniquity be found to be hateful. For he flattereth himself. Come with me to Proverbs chapter 7 and Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs 7 to start with. Verse 1. The psalmist, for sure, is not the only writer in the scriptures who speaks in a negative way about those who are proud. Proverbs 7, verse 1. My son, keep my words, and lay up my commandments with thee. Verse 5. That they may keep thee from the strange woman, from the stranger which flattereth with her words. Verse 21. With her much fair speech she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips she forced him. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to the grave, going down to the chambers of death. And over a page, backwards a page, to chapter 6 and verse 25. Lust not, verse 25, after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. How true it is then that so often a man's self-view, his own pride, makes him a hateful person. And brethren and sisters, the lesson is to be learned. As we've read just a few seconds ago from the Proverbs, there is much in the scriptures on this subject of pride and flattery, which is listed as a deadly sin and is an eminent characteristic of the flesh in contrast to the fruits of the Spirit. The key in overcoming these things, the key in overcoming the natural impulses and inclinations of the heart, is listed for us in Proverbs chapter 2, verse 1. My son, if thou wilt receive my words, and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom, and apply thine heart to understanding, yea, if thou criest after knowledge, and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver, and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of Yahweh, and find the knowledge of God. Brother Matthew read the exhortation on Sunday from Be Transformed, another work of Brother Grocott, from Volume 1. And I thought that Brother Grocott's view on Christ's own temptation was wonderful, and it is as follows. And the devil, the diabolos, taking him up into an high mountain, showeth him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time, and saith, all this power I will give thee, and the glory of them. For that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will, I give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine. The diabolos, he says, is sin in the flesh, in all its forms and manifestations, from within, from without, personal, social, national, political. The particular identity of the diabolos, the tempter, deceiver, in Jesus' case is not revealed, as it is not in the very similar case of Job. Therefore, it is not important that we know. The value of the record for us lies in other aspects of the matter, and God leaves out the unimportant parts that our attention may not be distracted from that which is important. Brother Grocott goes on, Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts were both firmly convinced that there was an external, personal tempter, whoever he may have been. We believe that the more we study the matter scripturally, he says, the more we will be convinced that this is the soundest and safest view. When God's purpose requires it, he can make sure that the necessary adversary is in the right place, as in the case of Adam and Moses and Job and so many others. We know Jesus had to battle and overcome the diabolos in himself. This was the whole essence and power and meaning of his victory. Brother Roberts points out that the mere impulse to do something God had prohibited is not in itself transgression. And Jesus was absolutely sinless. But the slightest entertaining of or giving into that impulse, even only in thought, is transgression. They are the words of Brother Roberts, quoted by Brother Grocott. He says, but the slightest entertaining of or giving in to that impulse, even only in thought, is transgression. And Jesus was absolutely sinless in thought, word, and deed. That basic fact we must preserve inviolate, and no interpretation can be entertained which even hints at undermining it. The idea is abhorrent that Jesus would ever voluntarily entertain or toy with or soliloquize within himself upon a course of sin, even for a moment. To his pure mind, all sin was repugnant and hateful immediately upon recognition. In contrast, brethren and sisters, to this rebellious attitude of the transgressor, we have the view of the psalmist, the right view, of course, in the rest of the chapter. And this view is expressed in many passages throughout Scripture. To contrast the thoughts of the wicked, we'd like to look at Psalm 147, verse 11. Yahweh, verse 11, taketh pleasure in them that fear him, in those that hope in his mercy. We'd like now to turn to the Proverbs again, this time chapter 8, verse 7. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 7. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Over a few pages to chapter 16 and verse 5. Everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to Yahweh. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. By mercy and truth iniquity is purged, and by the fear of Yahweh men depart from evil. Chapter 28. Verse 5. Evil men understand not judgment, but they that seek Yahweh understandeth all things. Better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he the rich. We took the introductory reading from Hosea. We'd like to go there to the same book, but a different chapter this time, at chapter 14. And Hosea speaks very much of this contrast, not in relation to man necessarily, but in relation to Israel. This contrast of natural wicked Israel in comparison to the righteous seed. Hosea chapter 14 and verse 9. Who is wise, and he shall understand these things? Prudent, and he shall know them. For the ways of Yahweh are right, and the just shall walk in them, but the transgressors shall fall therein. Back to Psalm 36, verse 3. Psalm chapter 36, verse 3. The words of his mouth are iniquity and deceit. He hath left off to be wise and to do good. Just like to compare this verse with Isaiah chapter 32, if we may, in verse 6. Which speaks of the vile person. Isaiah 32, verse 6. For the vile person will speak villainy, and his heart will work iniquity, to practice hypocrisy, and to utter error against Yahweh, to make empty the soul of the hungry, and he will cause the drink of the thirsty to fail. We also have the same contrast in James chapter 3. Verse 13. And James also speaks about this hypocritical life. James chapter 3 and verse 13. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is play-acting, assuming a role that does not conform to the reality. Many of the Pharisees feigned an appearance of piety that misrepresented their true state. It was an outward show that camouflaged their real character. The Greek word rendered hypocrisy primarily denotes a reply from a root signifying to answer. From thence it came to signify play-acting as the actor spoke to one another. A hypocrite is a talker whose words belie his actions. The words of his mouth are smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet were they drawn swords. Psalm 55:21. They say and do not, declared the Lord of the hypocrites of his day, Matthew 23, verse 3. Outwardly they appear righteous unto men, but within they are full of hypocrisy and iniquity, verse 28 of Matthew 23. Their mouth speaketh great swelling words, declared Jude, verse 16, having men's persons in admiration because of advantage. Such hypocrites held the truth in pretense, and like actors on a stage, assumed a position that did not conform to fact, blinding their dupes by so doing. But, brethren and sisters, as Hebrews 4 verse 13 puts it, all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. And I thought that that particular verse was very apt for our consideration of these first four verses this evening. Let him that saith, there is no fear of God before mine eyes, take note that all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. Yahweh is a God of love and mercy, but he is also a God of war. Behold the goodness and the severity. It is true that the vision we have of the future is of joy, peace, and happiness forevermore. But before those conditions prevail in the earth, Yahweh's anger is to be poured out upon a wicked and rebellious world, through which they shall learn righteousness. Let us go to Luke chapter 12. Verses 1 and 2. Luke 12, verses 1 and 2. In the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trod one upon another, he began to say unto his disciples, first of all, Beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. Brethren and sisters, if we are saying one thing through the words of our mouths, but doing another, be ever mindful of these words of Christ, that all is to be revealed. If we are hypocrites, play actors, talking the talk but not walking the walk, the day shall come when our actions shall be laid bare for all to see. When the secret things shall be shouted from the rooftops. 1 Peter chapter 1. Verse 22. Seeing ye have purified your souls in obeying the truth, through the Spirit, unto unfeigned love of the brethren, see that ye love one another with a pure heart fervently. Chapter 2, verse 1. Wherefore, laying aside all malice, and all guile, and hypocrisies, and envies, and all evil speakings. We'd like also, on this theme, to continue at 1 John chapter 3 and verse 17. But whoso, verse 17, hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Finally, on this point, before we take a quote from Brother Thomas, let us turn to Hosea chapter 6. Brother Thomas in Eureka volume 1 takes up this point of Hosea. And as always, deals with it meaningfully. Hosea chapter 6, verses 5 and 6. Therefore, says the prophet, have I hewed them by the prophets, I have slain them by the words of my mouth, and thy judgments are as the light that goeth forth. For I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. So from volume 1 of Eureka, Brother Thomas says, the sword directed by the mouth of the similitude is said to be sharp and two-edged. It is sharp for cut and thrust, the sword of a mighty man ready for execution, and whichever way directed is sure to smite effectively. The voice of the words of the great multitude, symbolized by this sword, is the voice of the eternal spirit speaking through them as the ministers of his vengeance. Hence the sword is symbolical of what Paul styles the spirit of his mouth, which is the Lord Jesus anointed, the mouth of the body. Thus, though represented by this cutting instrument, Paul says, the word of deity is living and powerful, and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. The word is sharper now, for it can penetrate in argument where a sword cannot reach. But how much sharper will it be when the word of command shall find expression through a two-edged sword in the hands of the saints? But while Jesus is mouth in a personal sense, he and the saints are the mouth of the Son of Man in a corporate sense. This personal and corporate sense, in its conjoint signification, must not be lost sight of in the prophetic and symbolical scriptures, or we shall fail to perceive their meaning in the full extent. Thus Isaiah, speaking of the one body in its Alpha and Omega manifestation, says in chapter 11, verse 4, that the rod of Jesse's stem shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. And the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the waters cover the sea, so that the enemy is slain by the words of his mouth. Hosea 6, verse 5. By reading Isaiah 49, it will be seen what is to be affected by this sword of the Spirit wielded by David's house. It affects the restoration of Israel and the salvation of the nations from the superstition and misgovernment that destroys them on every side. Come with me now to Job chapter 23. And verse 12. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. And Ecclesiastes 10, verse 12. Ecclesiastes 10, verse 12. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow up himself. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. A fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be, and what shall be after him. Who can tell him? And finally then on this point, Proverbs 8. Because we have this great contrast, brethren and sisters, of the words of men's mouths, both from natural men to disaster, and to righteous men unto righteousness. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 32. Now therefore, hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction, and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favour of Yahweh. But he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. I'd like now to go back to the Psalms, at the 36th chapter, in verse 4. He deviseth mischief upon his bed. He setteth himself in a way that is not good. He abhorreth not evil. And remember at the start that we said this verse 4, is one of those pivotal verses of the Psalms. We'd now like to compare the words of the psalmist with Proverbs chapter 6. As we did say earlier, there's a lot of thought links throughout these few chapters of the Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 12. A worthless person, a wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. He winketh with his eyes, he speaketh with his feet, he teacheth with his fingers. Frowardness is in his heart. He deviseth mischief continually. he soweth discord. Psalm 36, verse 5. We now move into the second part of this psalm. Thy mercy, O Yahweh, is in the heavens. So the psalmist, now leaving the idea of the great wickedness in general of mankind, turns instead unto his Creator. Thy mercy, O Yahweh, is in the heavens, and thy faithfulness reacheth unto the clouds. Word faithfulness means fidelity. We'll remember, brethren and sisters, the Amen witness of the apocalypse, the true and faithful witness. And indeed, such is the character of both Yahweh and Jesus Christ. Our time is going, but we'll remember those that were present at Brother Phil's address on Isaiah, when he turned to a number of passages in connection with this aspect of Yahweh's faithfulness. We only have time, unfortunately, to look at a few. And there, the first one is in Isaiah, the 25th chapter. Verse 1, O Yahweh, thou art my God, I will exalt thee, I will praise thy name, for thou hast done wonderful things, thy counsels of old are faithfulness and truth. The others, for those taking notes, I'm not going to turn to them, we don't have time unfortunately, but are in Psalm 40, verse 10, Psalm 89, Psalm 92 and verse 2, Psalm 119 verse 90, and we will turn to Lamentations chapter 3. Lamentations chapter 3, verse 22. It is of Yahweh's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness. Yahweh is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. Brethren and sisters, we'd like you to contrast those words of the prophet there in humility with those first four verses of Psalm 36, and what a difference in attitude is manifested. Indeed, be ye transformed by the renewing of your minds. Brother Grocott says again, we must be able to feel when we go to bed each night that we have that day done our most and best, that all we have done was necessary and useful, and the most important thing to be done at that time, and that we have done it with all our heart unto the Lord. We must not be satisfied with what we have done, but we must be reasonably satisfied that we have tried our best, and that we have noted and learned something by our slips and failures. We must be able to feel we are slowly overcoming, growing, deepening, becoming more naturally spiritual, that is, less as duty and effort, more as pleasure and desire. We must be able to see ourselves passing some tangible milestones of progress, a steady transformation of the mind Godwards, less and less interest in passing worldly animal things of any kind, except secondarily, like the signs of the times, as related to God's onward moving purpose. And even this we must see somewhat dispassionately as from afar. For that will come of a certainty. Our major and overwhelming concern must be to be personally
ready
when it does. When the dreadful and joyful cry goes forth, the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife hath made herself ready. The marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife hath made herself ready. Are we, brethren and sisters, have we made ourselves ready? There were 5 wise and 5 foolish in the parable. 5 had made themselves ready. Their lamps were well trimmed, burning brightly. The other 5 were not ready. Their lamps were not trimmed, and their lights were due to go out. What a contrast. Now is the day of opportunity. Now is the day of preparation. And Christadelphian answers, there is a section on the goodness and severity of Yahweh's character, which we would advise people to read. There are many quotations listed there showing that Yahweh indeed is a man of war as well as a God of love. To the rebellious class, he is all-consuming. Let us transform our minds by renewing our thoughts continually with his word. Let us be washed and cleansed. Let us vex our righteous souls from day to day, from ungodly people and from all their ungodly deeds. Verse 6 of Psalm 36. We have 10 or 15 minutes left, and we're now, brethren and sisters, going to move fairly quickly through these last few verses. Psalm 36. Thy righteousness is like the great mountains, or the mountains of God, as is in the margin, the high and lofty mountains. Thy judgments are a great deep, O Yahweh. Thou preservest man and beast. Think, brethren and sisters, of Yahweh's mercy in comparison to the height of Yahweh and his steadfast love and mercy. Judgments, a great deep, from the Hebrew, Mishpat Rab Tiam, which means the judicial verdicts as abundant waters. Mercy and justice, the goodness and the severity. One translation puts the verse like this: Thy righteousness is like the lofty mountains, thy judgments are like the great abyss. O Yahweh, who savest man and beast, how precious is thy unfailing love. Yahweh does preserve both man and beast. Acts chapter 17. And verse 24, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. And Psalm 104, verse 27. The one thing, brethren and sisters, that strikes us with all of this is that, you know, sometimes when you stay away in a hotel, you'll see the Gideon Bible, just of the Psalms and of the New Testament. But what good is the Scriptures just made up of the Psalms and the New Testament? The Bible is alive. It is one record, and it all interweaves one with another. Psalm 104, verse 27. These wait all upon thee, that thou mayest give them their meat in due season, that thou givest them they gather. Thou openest thine hand, they are filled with good. Thou hidest thy face, they are troubled. Thou takest away their breath, they die, and return to their dust. Verse 7 of Psalm 36. How excellent is thy loving kindness, O God! Therefore the children of men put their trust under the shadow of thy wings. That word excellent in the Hebrew is the Hebrew word yakar, and it means valuable, precious. How valuable, how precious is thy loving kindness, O God! Ruth chapter 2. We will go there. Ruth chapter 2. We have this aspect in this seventh verse of those dwelling under the shadow of Yahweh's wing, or Christ's wing, as it's a messianic psalm. Ruth chapter 2. And verse 12, just quickly. Verse 11 for connection. And Boaz answered and said unto her, It hath fully been showed me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thine husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and art come unto a people which thou knewest not heretofore. Yahweh recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of Yahweh Elohim of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Brother Mansfield on this says, Hide me under the shadow of thy wings from the wicked that oppress me, from my deadly enemies who compass me about, Psalm 17. How excellent is thy loving kindness, O God! Therefore the children of men put their trust under the shadow of thy wings, Psalm 36, verse 7. In the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge until these calamities be overpassed, Psalm 57 and verse 1. And in regard to the Messiah specifically, it was predicted, Psalm 91 verse 4, He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. And with that in mind, brethren and sisters, we can see then how the messianic theme is played out in this second part of Psalm 36. Brother Mansfield says, as figurative of the ever-ready defense of Yahweh, the cover that is always available to those who put their trust in him, it is appropriate that two wings are always shown stretched down to hide, as well as two wings stretched out to fly. Once the work of judgment is completed, however, the cherubim will let down their wings. Once the nations are subdued, there will be no need of the saints, as belligerently manifested, to move swiftly to and fro throughout the earth for judgment. The wings will be let down, and all mankind will find refuge thereunder. All mankind will find refuge thereunder. The tumult of the army, the noise of the saints as a mighty river in flood, will give peace, will give place to the peace, quietness, and order of the millennium. Let's go to verse 8 quickly of Psalm 36. What a comforting thought then, brethren and sisters, that we too are able to, as Ruth did and as Boaz acknowledged, came to learn to rest under Yahweh's wings. Verse 8, They shall be abundantly satisfied with the fatness of thy house, and thou shalt make them drink of the river of thy pleasures. Let us go just briefly to Matthew chapter 5. Keep your hand in Psalm because we're going straight back there. Let us go to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 6, where it speaks of Yahweh's steadfast love. Matthew chapter 5. Blessed are they, says Christ, happy are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Verse 9 of Psalm 36. For with thee is the fountain of life, in thy light shall we see light. Let us quickly go to Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs verse 13, Proverbs 13 and verse 13. Whoso despiseth the word shall be destroyed, but he that feareth the commandment shall be rewarded. The law of the wise is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. It is, brethren and sisters, all very reasonable. The eternal should be first. The first should be highest. The omnipotent should be feared. The most excellent should be worshipped. The creator of all things, the source of all life, the upholder of the universe, the giver of all good, the fountain of life eternal, should be extolled and had in supremest reverence. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. Heaven and earth are full of his glory. As we sung earlier. What abortions and illegitimate of saints must we be if we are backward to join our mortal praise with the ascriptions of the angelic host? We must or perish. The education of the truth is to prepare us to take part in that mighty anthem which will peal forth thunderously like the noise of many waters to the honour of the Eternal Father. Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honour and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. And then in conclusion, we finish up with these last two verses, which is, as it were, a petition of the righteous, a prayer that we fall not after the mighty of the flesh. Brother Freddie Hyam did a survey not too long back with a group of brethren and sisters as to why seemingly faithful brethren, strong in the truth, filled with the word, were able to slip away into the paths of the wicked and stand aside from truth. He concluded from all the scenarios and accounts which people returned to him that man falls because of one main thing, and that is pride. The psalmist here says, let not the foot of pride come against me, and let not the hand of the wicked remove me. Let this, brethren and sisters, be our petition too. Let not the foot of pride come against us. There are the workers of iniquity fallen. They are cast down and shall not be able to rise. The next psalm, which Brother Matthew will deal with in our Sunday lecture, commences, fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass, and withered as the green herb. Trust in Yahweh and do good. That is our concluding thought of our study this evening. Trust in Yahweh and do good. Thy mercy, O Yahweh, is in the heavens, and thy faithfulness reacheth unto the clouds.